from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 14, Text Number 26. Translation. Lord Shiva regards no one as his relative. Yet there is no one who is not connected with him. He does not regard anyone as very favorable or abominable. We respectfully worship the remnants of his foodstuff, and we vow to accept what is rejected by him. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Kashyapa informed his wife that just because Lord Shiva happened to be his brother-in-law, that should not encourage her in her offence towards him. Kashyapa warned her that actually Lord Shiva is not connected with anyone, nor is anyone his enemy. Since he is one of the three controllers of the universal affairs, he is equal to everyone. His greatness is incomparable because he is a great devotee of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. It is said that among all the devotees of the Personality of Godhead, Lord Shiva is the greatest. Thus, the remnants of foodstuff left by him are accepted by other devotees as Mahaprasad, or great spiritual foodstuff. The remnants of foodstuff offered to Lord Krishna are called Prasad, but when that same Prasad is eaten by a great devotee like Lord Shiva, it is called Mahaprasad. Lord Shiva is so great that he does not care for the material prosperity for which every one of us is so eager. Parvati, who is the powerful material nature personified, is under his full control as his wife, yet he does not use her even to build a residential house. He prefers to remain without shelter, and his great wife also agrees to live with him humbly. People in general worship Goddess Durga, the wife of Lord Shiva, for material prosperity. But Lord Shiva engages her in his service without material desire. He simply advises his great wife that all kinds of worship, that of all kinds of worship, the worship of Vishnu is the highest. And greater than that is the worship of a great devotee or anything in relation with Vishnu. I read the translation again. Lord Shiva regards no one as his relative, yet there is no one who is not connected with him. He does not regard anyone as very favorable or abominable. We respectfully worship the remnants of his foodstuff, and we vow to accept what is rejected by him. So, as with so many of Srila Prabhupada's purports, this is just filled with very important instructions. And for devotees in ISKCON, you know, this is important because, you know, sometimes devotees, we know that it's an offence to take shelter of demigods. And thus minimize Krishna's protection, because Krishna's protection is all we need. And we saw that in the pastime of Hiranyakashipu being killed. Hiranyakashipu, of course, had taken over the whole heavenly planets. anyone who was taking shelter of the demigods for protection was without protection, because the demigods were fleeing in fear of Hiranyakashipu. So where was their protection? But the Lord killed that great demon, just like one may just take a little wasp and rip them apart very easily. So no one can compare. If someone takes shelter of the demigods because they don't have faith in Krishna, that's an offence, especially for a Vaishnava. But that doesn't mean we can't worship Lord Shiva. We worship him because, as described here, he's actually considered the greatest Vaishnava. So we're not taking shelter of him thinking that, well, you know, maybe Krishna's not going to protect us, what have you. We're taking shelter of him because, as described by here, if you want Krishna's protection, you should approach Krishna through his devotees. And that includes Lord Shiva. And Krishna becomes very pleased by that. Devotees are exclusively seeking Krishna's shelter. Exclusively. And not anyone else. And to do that, they can take shelter of his devotees, such as Lord Shiva. In the same way, when we take shelter of the spiritual master, you know, one cannot say, oh, that's offensive, you're supposed to be, you know, exclusive to taking shelter of Krishna. You know, I see you taking shelter of someone else. You know, it's foolish. The spiritual master is a representative, great Vaishnava. Krishna becomes very pleased. He considers that's how you take shelter exclusively of Krishna. So Lord Shiva, he has his own Vaishnava Sampradaya. So, but there's a right and a wrong way mentality, and devotees should learn the proper mentality. In fact, you know, actually to gain entrance into the Dham, Lord Shiva is one of the personalities one has to please in order to actually enter into the mood of worship of the Brajavasi. One has to worship Shiva, the dust of the Dham. There are five different personalities. But Lord Shiva is one of them. And Govardhan, Talasi, maybe one more, maybe Yogamaya. So, Lord Jiva is one of those five principal personalities. One must get their blessings, otherwise you don't gain proper entrance into the Dham. We also understand that Lord Shiva has a name as Gopishvara. There is a special mood between Krishna, between Lord Shiva and the Brajalila pastimes, as in his form as Gopishvara. But here, Prabhupada mentions that, among all the devotees, the personality of Godhead, Lord Shiva is the greatest. So among all the devotees, because we understand that, that may refer to devotees in the material world, among all the devotees in the spiritual world, in Vrindavan, the gopis. You know, the greatest. Thus, the remnants of foodstuff left by him are accepted by other devotees as Mahaprasad. So devotees can actually accept the foodstuffs of Lord Shiva. But, as Prabhupada describes, the remnants of foodstuff are offered to Krishna, are called Prasad, but when the same Prasad is eaten by a great devotee like Lord Shiva, it is called Mahaprasad. So food is first offered to Krishna, and then if that food, if that prasad is offered to Lord Shiva, a devotee can eat that. That's different from if you're in the association of demigod worshippers who neglect Krishna and offer food directly to Lord Shiva. We don't eat that because it's not been offered to Krishna. There's a very slight difference. So, so you know, many times when I do home programs, sometimes people invite me that you know, we're doing Durga Puja, we're doing, you know, Shiva Puja, and they say, "Will you come?" I say, "Yes." There are some places they have big deity of Krishna, and then next to big deity of Durga and Ganesh, like that. Very opulent temple in their home. But I go there and I teach them, and when they cook, I say, "We have to offer to Krishna first. Then we're going to take that, and we're going to offer that to your deity of Durga or Shiva. Then we can honor the prasad." And I teach them that. And they do it. And that they're very happy to do that, because they don't often, you know, understand. That's why they invite devotees, you know, "Please teach us." So in this way, you know, their proper understanding is enhanced. Now, here, Kashyapa, so Kashyapa, he's informing his wife that, of course, his wife is wanting a child. She's very eager to have a child. You know, sometimes you hear this quotation very, you know, they splashed around Islam a little bit. Without any realization that, you know, women are what, 7 times more lusty than men, right? So generally, you know, like that. Women are very desirous. They may be more desirous to have, you know, a child sometimes than men. But don't look at the Vaishnavi women as being more lusty in a material way. They may be very eager to have children. Sometimes, that's natural. In that way, you know, they may be considered more lusty, but not that we should look at them as, you know, be careful. They're Vaishnavis. And it's very natural for them to, you know, want to have children. They may be more eager than men, sometimes, like that. So, here we see that deity was also very much inclined to have children. She becomes somewhat distressed, or her sisters, you know, well, the 13 I think, were married to Kashyapa. They all had children, and here she doesn't have any children. So, you know, it's becoming distressful. Of course, the time is approaching. Lord Shiva is Kashyapa has you know, performed his worship as the sun is going down. You know, when the sun goes down, there are certain times either side of that which are very auspicious. We know we chant Gayatri, so we worship the sun god in one sense. We understand that then we're worshiping the Lord and Srimati Radharani, but via the sun god. Or sometimes they worship the Lord through the sacred fire, and then they do some meditation, very auspicious to do that. You get extra piety, just like in Kartik, you know, you get extra credits for your worship at certain times. There are certain times of sunrise, sunset, or when the sun changes sign in certain conditions, where you actually get extra bonus points, you know, if you worship. So he was doing that, and but at the same time, you know, that time is also the time where Lord Shiva is, you know, the ghosts and the goblins and what have you come out. And one should not, you know, try to conceive children at that time, because there's a high likelihood it's forbidden, and you know, the result of that is that you know, one may have a child whose qualities are somewhat very materialistic or sometimes even demoniac. So Kashyapa was informing him, therefore he's bringing in, you know, to this conversation about Lord Shiva, you know, he's not going to be happy. Jagannath, Jagannath Das Babaji says that, you know, devotees should rise early, you know, during the Brahma Muhurta, and not sleep before a certain time, certainly, you know, some hours, 3 hours at least after sunrise, because Lord Shiva comes to inspect the devotees. You know, at those times, if devotees are, you know, sleeping when they're not supposed to be sleeping, Lord Shiva comes to inspect, and you know, if he's not very happy, then his associates may harass that devotee like that in different ways. But to be free from the harassment of Lord Shiva's associates, one has to, you know, follow certain guidelines like that. So, therefore, now Kashyapa is explaining that, in one sense, you know, if in one sense, as we see, Kashyapa is also not really strongly fixed as a devotee, so he's sort of trying to convince his wife not to engage in this activity of conceiving children at this time. He'd rather her wait. And at the same time, he's sort of not really as fixed up as he should be. And therefore, you know, he's not as convincing as he should be. So, but, you know, they both understand, and as he's pointing out, that in one sense, Lord Shiva is your relative, so, you know, if something goes wrong, I guess, that, you know, because Parvati, or, what is it, Aditi's, one of the sisters, one of Kashyapa's wives, one of Diti's, Daksha's daughters, right? So, so many of Daksha's daughters married Kashyapa, and one of his daughters is Sati. Therefore, that makes, because Kashyapa's wife's sister is the wife of Shiva, that makes Shiva his brother-in-law, right? So, so, you know, in one sense, he's cautioning Diti. In another sense, you know, there is a relationship. So both are there. But, you know, if there's some offence, perhaps, you know, let's not commit an offence, but if there's some offence, you know, perhaps one may not be punished as severely as others. But he is pointing out that Lord Shiva regards no one as his relative, yet there is no one who is not connected with him. He does not regard anyone as very favourable or abominable. So he's sitting quite neutral, because he is, after all, one of the controllers of universal affairs, and therefore they have to represent Krishna's, or the Supreme Personality of Godhead's, qualities, and or the Supersoul, or Vishnu, and one of Vishnu's qualities, of course, is that he is neutral, sitting like a, you know, a judge, as a witness, and just like a judge in a court, he is neutral to everyone. He's, when someone comes in, you know, whether they're a relative or non-relative, if they've broken the law or they need to be rewarded by the government, then he is doing that neutrally. So Lord Shiva, representing the Supreme Lord, has to act in that same way as well. So therefore there's also a warning to deity, you know, be very careful not to create an offence. Don't become slack in your principles due to some material conception of the Lord, forgetting his position as a devotee and a representative of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Be very, very careful. And a very good instruction, you know, that, you know, within a community also, within families, you know, you have father, mother, husband, wife, children, you know, there's naturally some concession for a little familiarity, but if it goes too far and one forgets, I am dealing with one of Krishna's devotees. Like Prabhupada said, you know, there's one devotee, you know, sometimes there are many devotees who sometimes have trouble, you know, the association in ISKCON between men and women. And Prabhupada said, you know, you should see these women as Krishna's gopis, like that, you know. So, don't, you know, be very careful seeing devotees in a material way or an over-familiar way. They're representatives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead foremost. And then, you know, there's some, you know, relationship of friend, you know, or, you know, sisters, cousins, second cousins, like that. But be very careful that those relationships do not allow one to become over-familiar in the association of devotees and forget our responsibility in associating with devotees. You have to be very careful. That's the instruction here. If one begins to see devotees in a materialistic way or too familiar way, then of course, you know, offences are created, and that's what Lord Shiva is saying to here. You know, that Lord Shiva is my brother-in-law, you know, Durga Devi is your sister, but, you know, don't, as Prabhupada says, that should not encourage her in her offence towards him. That should not encourage one like that. Now, therefore, rather, the devotees, rather than seeing them in an over-familiar way, actually, the devotees should take the remnants or the foodstuffs of other Vaishnavas. That's, you know, try to get the dust of the lotus feet, take their foodstuffs and hear the Krishna conscious statements coming from their mouth. That's the main association with devotees that one does. Which is very, very, it's a very nice life, you know, if you think about it. That there are, you know, thanks to Srila Prabhupada, we have unlimited devotees in ISKCON, and we can spend our whole life just taking their remnants, hearing the discourses, getting the dust from the village. It's a pretty nice life, really, like that. So, actually, there's a nice pastime in Chaitanya Charitamrita about that. I'll read this to you. This is about Kalidas. Kalidas is one of the uncles of Raghunath Das Goswami. There's about 50 verses here. Vande Shri, this is from the Chaitanya Charitamrita Antalila Volume 5, chapter 16, I'm starting from text number 1. I won't read the Hindu. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who personally tasted the nectar of ecstatic love for Krishna and then instructed his devotees how to taste it. Thus he enlightened them about ecstatic love of Krishna to initiate them into transcendental knowledge. All glories to Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, all glories to Lord Nityananda, all glories to Advaita Acharya, and all glories to all the devotees of the Lord. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu thus stayed at Jagannath Puri in the association of his devotees, always merged in ecstatic devotional love. The next year, as usual, all the devotees from Bengal went to Jagannath Puri, and, as in previous years, there was a meeting between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and the devotees. So this went on for 18 years. Along with the devotees from Bengal came a gentleman named Kalidas. He never uttered anything but the holy name of Krishna. Kalidas was a very advanced devotee. Did I say Krishna Das before Kalidas? Kalidas. Kalidas was a very advanced devotee, yet he was simple and liberal. He would chant the holy name of Krishna while performing his ordinary dealings. When he used to throw dice in jest, he would throw the dice while chanting Hare Krishna. In this connection, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakura warns the men of this age not to imitate the jesting of a Mahabhagavat like Kalidas. If someone imitates him by playing with dice or gambling while chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, he will certainly become a victim of offences unto the holy name. As it is said, Harinam Balaya Prabhriti, one must not commit sinful activities on the strength of chanting the Hare Krishna Mantra. Playing with dice is certainly gambling, but it is clearly said here that Kalidas did this only in jest. A Mahabharata can do anything, but he never forgets the basic principles. Therefore it is said, Vaishnavera Kriya Mudra Vigaya Nabuchaya. No one can understand the activities of a pure devotee. We should not imitate Kalidas. I remember one time on Sankirtan, I was selling paintings, and because in those days, you know, if you thought someone may purchase a painting, you know, the price may go up a little bit. you thought, you know, there's a good chance if you thought it was difficult to get a sale, the price may go down a little bit before you mention the price on top. Anyway, there was this one man, and he liked a painting, and he was a really tough customer. I was very unsure I was going to get there. I talked to him for a long time, and you know, basically he was sort of on the verge of saying no, which you never let him get to that point. And anyway, he said to me, "Look, I'll throw the dice. You know, if I win, I'll give you half the amount you say. And if I lose, I'll give you double the amount." So what I did was I put a high price on the painting, which is okay. So that even if I lost, I was going to get a good profit. So, you know, he flipped the coin and I lost, you know, which I figured. I thought, Krishna's, you know, Krishna, thanks, you know, don't encourage me. So... anyway, he bought the painting and I made a profit at that. So I got the sale, which I ordinarily would. Anyway, I felt bad about it, you know, and then when my spiritual master came, I said, you know, Gurudev, I've broken the principles of gambled, you know. I told him the story and I said, was it gambling? Because either way I was going to win and Krishna was going to win. He said, sort of, technically, yes, but, you know, it's, you know, you didn't really do anything wrong, he said, but still avoid that because if you had one, it may have encouraged you to, you know, go further like that, and then gradually it leads into breaking the principle. So, you know, I didn't do that again. But so anyway, we're connected here. I'll read on. Kalidas was an uncle of Raghunath Das Goswami. Throughout his entire life, even in his old age, he tried to eat the remnants of food left by Vaishnavas. Kalidas ate the remnants of food as many Vaishnavas as there were in Bengal. So that means anyone who lives in the temple, anyone who doesn't live in the temple, anyone who's got a position, anyone who doesn't have a position, anyone who's, you know, whatever, no consideration, they're a Vaishnava, I'll take their vishada. He would go to all the Vaishnavas born in Brahmana families, be they neophyte or advanced devotees, and present them with gifts of first-class eatables. He would beg remnants of food from such Vaishnavas, and if they did not receive any, he would hide. After the Vaishnavas finished eating, they would throw away their dishes or leaves, and Kalidas would come out of hiding, take the leaves, and lick up the remnants. He would also take gifts to the homes of Vaishnavas born in Sudra families. Then he would hide and eat the remnants of food they threw away in this manner. There was a great Vaishnava named Jadu Thakur who belonged to the Bunimali caste. Kalidas went to his home taking mangoes with him. Purport. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur remarks that both Kalidas and Jadu Thakur are worshipped at a place called Sripatabhati in the village known as Badu or Badua. Next verse. Kalidas presented the mangoes to Jadu Thakur and offered him respectful obeisances. Then he also offered respectful obeisances to the Thakur's wife. There's another thing. When Kalidas went to Jadu Thakur, he saw that saintly person sitting with his wife. As soon as Jadu Thakur saw Kalidas, he likewise offered his respectful obeisances unto him. After a discussion for some time with Kalidas, Jadu Thakur said something to him in sweet words. I belong to a low caste and you are a very respectful guest. How shall I serve you? If you permit me, I will send some food to a Brahmana's house, and there you may take prasad. If you do so, I shall then live very comfortably. Kalidas replied, my dear sir, please bestow your mercy upon me. I have come to see you, although I am very fallen and sinful. Simply by seeing you, I have become purified. I am very obligated to you, for my life is now successful. My dear sir, I have one desire. Please be merciful to me by kindly placing your feet upon my head so that the dust of your feet may touch it. Jadu Thakur replied, it does not befit you to ask this of me. I belong to a very low caste family, whereas you are a respectful, rich gentleman. Kalidas then recited some verses which Jadu Thakur was very happy to hear. Quote, this is from Hari Bhakti Vilas. Even though one is a very learned scholar in Sanskrit literature, if he is not engaged in pure devotional service, he is not accepted as my devotee. But if someone born in a family of dog-eaters is a pure devotee with no motives for enjoyment through fruitive activity or mental speculation, he is very dear to me. All respect should be given to him, and whatever he offers should be accepted by such devotees, for such devotees are indeed as worshipable as I am. A person may be born in a Brahmana family and have all 12 Brahminical qualities. This is the next verse, which is from Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.10 and 3.33.7. But if in spite of being qualified, if he is not devoted to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna, who has a navel shaped like a lotus, he is not as good as a chandala who has dedicated his mind, words, activities, wealth and life to the service of the Lord. Simply to take birth in the Brahmana family or to have Brahminical qualities is not sufficient. One must become a pure devotee of the Lord. If a svapacha or chandala is a devotee, He delivers not only himself, but his whole family. Whereas a brahmana who is not a devotee, but simply has brahminical qualifications, cannot even purify himself, not to speak of his family. Here's another verse. My dear Lord, anyone who always keeps your holy name on his tongue is greater than an initiated brahmana. Although he may be born in a family of dog eaters and therefore, by material calculations, be the lowest of men, he is glorious nevertheless. That is the wonderful power of chanting the holy name of the Lord. One who chants the holy name is understood to have performed all kinds of austerities. He has studied all the Vedas. He has performed all the great sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas. He has already taken his bath in all the holy places of pilgrimage. And it is he who is factually the Aryan. Hearing these quotations from the revealed scripture, Srimad Bhagavatam, Jagatthakur replied, yes, this is true, for it is a version of Sastra. It is true. However, for one who is generally advanced in devotion to Krishna, such a position may befit others, but I do not possess such spiritual power. I belong to a lower class and have not even a pinch of devotion to Krishna. There's a long purport there. I'll move on. If you want to read that purport, it's a wonderful purport. It's this chapter 16 of the Antalila, verse number 29. A very nice long purport. Kalidas again offered his obeisances to Jagatthakur and asked his permission to go. The saint Jagatthakur followed him as he left. After bidding farewell to Kalidas, Jagatthakur returned to his home, leaving the marks of his feet plainly visible in many places. Kalidas smeared the dust from those footprints all over his body. Then he hid in a place near Jagatthakur's home. Upon returning home, Jagatthakur saw the mangoes Kalidas had presented. Within his mind, he offered them to Krishna Chandra. Jagatthakur's wife then took the mangoes from their covering of banana tree leaves and bark and offered them to Jagatthakur, who began to suck and eat them. When he finished eating, he left the seeds on the banana leaf, and his wife, after feeding her husband, later began to eat. After she finished eating, she filled the banana leaves and bark with the seeds, picked them up and threw them in the ditch where all the refuse was thrown. Kalidas licked the banana bark and the mango seeds and skins, and while licking them, he was overwhelmed in jubilation by ecstatic love. In this way, Kalidas ate the remnants of food left by all the Vaishnavas residing in Bengal. When Kalidas visited Jagannath Puri, Nilachala, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu bestowed great mercy upon him. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had been regularly visiting the temple of Jagannath every day, and at that time, Govinda, his personal servant, used to carry his water pot and go with him. On the northern side of the Simhadwara, behind the door, there are 22 steps leading to the temple, and at the bottom of those steps is a ditch. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would wash his feet in this ditch, and then he would enter the temple to see Lord Jagannath. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu ordered his personal servant Govinda that no one should take the water that had washed his feet. Because of the Lord's strict order, no living being could take the water. Some of his intimate devotees, however, would take it by some trick. One day, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was washing his feet in that place. Kalidas came and extended his palm to take the water. Kalidas drank one palmful and then a second and a third. Then Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu forbade him to drink more. Do not act in this way anymore. I have fulfilled your desire as far as possible. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the most exalted, omniscient, supreme personality of Godhead, and therefore he knew that Kalidas, in the core of his heart, had full faith in Vaishnavas. Because of this quality, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu satisfied him with mercy not attainable by anyone else. There's the principle of advancement in Krishna consciousness. If you have faith in the Vaishnavas, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or bestow his full mercy upon you. Right then. that humble mood. Therefore, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, wear that verse, Trinadapi Sinichinata Loyvasishra Manina Manadina Kiritanya Sadahari. On the southern side, behind and above the 22 steps, is a deity, Lord Narasimhadev. It is on the left as one goes up the steps toward the temple. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, his left side toward the deity, offered obeisances to Lord Narasimha. So we always offer obeisances with the left side to the deity or the spiritual master. And so he offered his obeisances to Lord Narasimha as he proceeded toward the temple. He recited the following verses again and again while offering obeisances. Namaste Narasimhaya Paladaladayani Hiranyakasipuvaksham Silvatamkanakolayi. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you, Lord Narasimhadev. You are the giver of pleasure to Maharaj Pralad, and your nails cut the chest of Hiranyakasipu like a chisel cutting stone. Lord Narasimhadev is here and he is also there on the opposite side. Wherever I go, there I see Lord Narasimhadev. He is outside and within my heart. Therefore, I take shelter of Lord Narasimhadev, the original Supreme Personality of Godhead. Having offered obeisances to Lord Narasimhadev, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu visited the temple of Lord Jagannath. Then he returned to his residence, finished his noon duties, and took his lunch. Kalidas was standing outside the door, expecting the remnants of food from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Knowing this, Mahaprabhu gave an indication to Govinda. Govinda understood all the indications of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Therefore, he immediately delivered the remnants of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's food to Kalidas. Taking the remnants of the food of Vaishnavas is so valuable that it induced Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to offer Kalidas his supreme mercy. Therefore, give up hatred and hesitation. Try to eat the remnants of the food of Vaishnavas, for you will thus be able to achieve your desired goal of life. The remnants, this is a very important verse. The remnants of food offered to Lord Krishna are called Mahaprasad. After the same Mahaprasad has been taken by a devotee, the remnants are elevated to Mahaprasad. These verses also. The dust of the feet of a devotee, the water that has washed the feet of a devotee, and the remnants of food left by a devotee are three very powerful substances. By rendering service to these three, one attains the supreme goal of ecstatic love for Krishna. In all revealed scriptures, this is loudly declared again and again. Therefore, my dear devotees, please hear from me, for I insist again and again. Please keep faith in these three and render service to them without hesitation. From these three, one achieves the highest goal of life, ecstatic love of Krishna. This is the greatest mercy of Lord Krishna. The evidence is Kalidas himself. Maybe if there's any quick questions. In ISKCON, the devotees who take advantage of the society and they want to begin the process of pure devotional service, then from the beginning they're on the path of pure devotional service. They may have some bad habits. They may have been, it's like Maharaj Gadamakanan Maharaj was speaking to someone who was born in India. Who was that? like a Brahman or initiation? First initiation. So she was born in India. So naturally there's a tendency. But, you know, sometimes even though people are associated with Krishna, not saying personally she is, but sometimes people are associated with Krishna, there may still be mixed devotees in the sense that they're not on... Mixed devotee means that the... although there's a little bhakti, the predominance within their heart is karma, jnana or yoga. That's the predominance. Pure devotee means the predominance is bhakti. And even though, you know, from the very beginning, you know, those devotees, they may have some residue of karma, you know, and jnana, etc. But, you know, they're on the path of, you know, wanting that predominance of pure devotion. So as soon as they take shelter of the devotees and the spiritual master and Srila Prabhupada's books, you know, the predominance within their heart is bhakti. Bhakti is being put there as predominance, and therefore it's considered pure devotional service. They're on the path of pure devotional service even from the very beginning. That's the difference. Others, even though, you know, the predominance can remain in their heart without that proper association of pure devotees, the predominance in their heart, even though there's Krishna and there's Krishna bhakti and what have you, the predominance can be karma and jnana. Therefore, it's not considered bhakti proper or pure devotional service. It's called misra bhakti or mixed devotional service. So even though within, you know, devotees in the beginning there's a mixture, they're considered to be pure devotees in the neophyte stage. But in others, the mixture, because it's too much of a predominance and they haven't taken, you know, shelter of the pure devotees of the Lord, therefore they're considered misra or mixed devotees at that. So, you know, we take shelter of all the pure devotees of the Lord from the neophyte stage to the, you know, very advanced stage. And of course, you know, the more advanced one is in devotional service, the more potent is the remnants of that, you know, that devotee's, you know, Mahaprasad, Mahaprasad, and the dust of their feet in the water like that. But take this principle also, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu becomes very pleased that, okay, you know, the devotees are placing their faith in each other, whatever stage they're at. He likes that. It makes a very strong movement, and it creates loving, you know, reciprocations with devotees. So he rewards that. You know, he becomes very pleased. You know, Kalidas, you know, you know, anyone, Vaishnava, you know, as you say, they may be neophyte, they may be very advanced, but the fact that he places his faith in the pure Vaishnavas from neophyte stage to the mature stage, apart from getting the mercy of the Vaishnavas, you're also getting the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for having that faith. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is, you know, making up the difference. So one may think, oh, you know, I'm taking, you know, I'm associated with this neophyte devotee. You know, they're sort of sincere, they're, you know, like that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu makes up the difference. Therefore, really, yeah. Yeah, no, well. Yeah, that's right. You know, as Srila Prabhupada said, that, he specifically says in regard to Durga Devi, and my understanding standing is that it does apply to Shiv or Shiva as well. When people offer to Kali, who's an expansion of Durga Devi, they think that they're eating her remnants. But she actually only eats the Vishnu Prasad. And so she doesn't accept their offerings. They're accepted by her associates, the ghosts and various bhutas and goblins and jinns and what have you. So they're eating their remnants. So yes, Lord Shiva, it may accept it indirectly. And, in that way, it's not the same as Lord Shiva gives his full blessings to those who become Vaishnavas, take that instruction. As it says here, he's trying to educate people. He speaks to his wife, you worship Lord Vishnu, and even more so, you worship his devotees. One who does that, gets his full mercy. For instance, a father may have, different sons, and the father may, give instruction. You do this, and I'd like to, just like, for instance, if one is a king or, anything, I'd like to, give my kingdom over to you so that you can rule all the citizens in a very Krishna-conscious way. Now, the son who takes that up and tries to be, follow the father's example so that he's going to be very responsible both materially and spiritually, he's naturally inclined. Another son who sort of half-heartedly and in a wrong way, follows bits and pieces of the father's instructions as he pleases. It's the father's going to look after him because it's his son, but he may not hand over the whole kingdom to him like that. So, Lord Shiva is not going to place the responsibility of preaching the very confidential message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the teachings of the Brajavasis, in the hands of a nonsense. Is it? Is it? Lord Shiva, he gives some material benediction, a little something here and there, like that. But for the devotees who take Lord Shiva's instructions properly, he will be very pleased to bestow his mercy so that they can actually inherit, the responsibility of understanding and propagating the Krishna consciousness movement all over the universe like that. You're not going to hand that over to anyone who's going to be irresponsible with such valuable teachings, such confidential teachings. So, it's a very practical principle. Therefore, we said from the very beginning, by Lord Shiva's mercy, one can have entrance into Brajadham. That means, within the heart, wherever you are, at any time, at any place, there's always Vrindavan, because that's what's in the heart. And that's the real entrance of into Vrindavan, in the Krishna consciousness. And he allows that entrance. Lord Shiva is the predominating deity of false ego. And if one pleases Lord Shiva, he will release you from false ego. And Lord Shiva worships Sankirshan. Sankirshan also is the predominating deity of false ego. And so you can worship Sankirshan directly, or you can worship his devotee Shiva. And if you worship them nicely, they will release you from false ego, from the bodily material concept, and that means you will realize your eternal spiritual identity. But as long as one has not, then you can enter into Vrindavan. You can't enter into Vrindavan in the material concept of life. So that you first have to gain release from the false ego. Lord Shiva will allow that. And then gradually. Just like when my spiritual master gave me a Sankirtan Shalagram Shila, which I usually have when I do all the ceremonies. He had it like a cardboard box that had, you know, a brand new block of soap, which he had taken the soap out and put the deity in there because he didn't have it. It was a very nice little cardboard box. So he showed me that box and he said, "What's in here will cleanse you of your material body." And he opened up and there was Sankirtan at that. He said, "It's not so, but it will cleanse you of your material body." That. So, you know, if one offends a great Vaishnava like Lord Shiva, one will remain the bodily concept of life. So, you know, there's a great obstacle for pure Vaishnavas. But, you know, there will be some, you know, maybe get a little opulence, a little wealth. Actually, Lord Nityananda also, in the Gaura Kishore Das Babaji said that sometimes Lord Nityananda, when people are offensive to the Vaishnavas, what he does is he gives them material opulence so that they'll go away. He gives them, you know, they get knowledge, they get, you know, some opulence, they get husband, wife, like that. And then, you know, having been like that, they go away. He gives them that. So Lord Shiva also sometimes, if someone is offensive, the blessing may be in such a way, you know, I don't know if I want you harassing my devotees on a daily basis. I give you some blessing. You know. Any other questions?